allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, good morning. Thank you for coming. I want to introduce our board and staff. To my right is Mr. Bill Massey from Forestville. To my left is Mr. Jeff Hales from Eureka and Mr. John Corbett from McKinleyville, and I'm David Noren. We have a couple board members missing this morning, but we carry on. Thank you. And we have staff. Mr. St. John, would you please introduce staff?
Good morning, Matt St. John of your staff. To my right is Acting Assistant Executive Officer David Leland, Staff Counsel David Rice, and Donna, I am just blanking on, I'm not doing good on names today, sorry. Patty Corsi is helping us with speaker cards and helping to manage the meeting, and filling in on sound today is Drew, and we really appreciate Drew stepping in at the last minute to help on sound. So, good morning.
Go, Drew. Fantastic. Time for ex parte communication disclosure for board members identified discussions they've had outside the normal meeting procedures.
Mr. Chair, since our meeting in Eureka, I have been in Washington, D.C., and spent time with federal legislators.
Mr. Hale?
Mr. Chair, I've also met, and since our last meeting, I've had conversations with folks from Humboldt Road Company, as well as Assemblyman Chesbrough's office and Senator Evans' office regarding the Elk River. Also, I had a phone conversation with Patrick Higgins from the Humboldt Bay Harbor District regarding the future of the pulp mill site.
You've been busy. And I want to report that, well, not necessarily ex parte, but just to let board members know, I attended a meeting with David Leland and Matt St. John in Reading regarding some water rights, potential water right trades in Shasta Valley with other agencies. So it was a very nice meeting. We have Mr. Steve Moore today. Good morning, Mr. Good morning, Steve. Steve's our state board liaison, here to tell us the goings-on in Sacramento.
All right, yes. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. I'm Steve Moore, member of the State Water Resources Control Board. And part of the same agency, really. Truthfully, yes. It's true.
You got Mr. Corbett laughing about 4 minutes into this meeting. We're doing great.
Yeah, well, as we discuss and when we get together in our water quality coordinating committee, we say, we say we're perfecting the union, you know, as time goes by. We're never at perfection. So it's good to be here. And you have a quorum, so you can do business, and it's good to see. You know, it used to be five was a quorum, you know, so we're leaner and meaner and getting work done. So, you know, I, as usual, you know, just organize my talk about budget and then recent things we've done, things that are coming up that might be of interest here in this region, and maybe a little legislative stuff. And then you may have some questions, and I've got kind of some legislative breakdown because it's a busy time these days. So I'm sort of cherry picking, and if you've got a question, let me know. So in terms of budget, it's a little more smooth sailing for the water boards this year. Our folks involved in budget, the State Water Board, let's just say there wasn't a real aggressive asking for budget. You know, budget change proposals were not extensive, but everything the water boards requested was granted. And on May 9th, both houses of the state legislature approved what we were asking. There are eight items, and for your information, related to wastewater operator certification, small disadvantaged community wastewater projects, water recycling augmentation, water rights program augmentation, alignment of the underground tank cleanup fund and the orphan site cleanup fund, budget change proposal for timber harvest plans were approved. So So everything we asked for, we received. And then we were given even more in proposal. During the legislative budget approval process, there was a lot of discussion about nitrates in drinking water. It's an issue everywhere. This region, not as, let's say, acute an issue as some other parts of the state. But if you get National Geographic magazine, which I recommend to anybody interested in water issues because they do a good job. And there was the May issue, this is a really good article on nitrogen worldwide and the issue of population and making food for people. And this byproduct that we have to manage is people around the globe. So it's an issue here, and you know, if not California, where? You know, where is the innovation going to happen on this planet, truthfully? And so people are working real hard to work this out collaboratively in our state. The Senate has requested that the administration return with a proposal to elevate the drinking water program by shifting it to the Cal EPA, and specifically. I forget if it was the Assembly or the Senate, but on May 30th or 31st, let's see, what was it? It was the 31st, that Friday. It was a 45-27 vote, I guess it was in the Senate, to move the drinking water program, the Division of Drinking Water, out of the Department of Public Health into the State Water Board. So there's a lot of movement in that direction. I'm neutral, personally, as a State Board member about the issue. I see pluses and minuses. But as is the case with you all, you know, if that's what the legislature and the governor think is a good idea, well, we'll do our level best. So, you know, the Senate wanted budget language requiring well logs to be made public and to have a 2014 budget proposal from us to address concerns about so the permanent solutions to the nitrate groundwater contamination issue. So, you know, it continues both in the, you know, in the law side, legislation side, but also the budget side. A lot of movement in that that area from, you know, what's going on in Sacramento. The Senate has indicated it will likely request augmentation of the beach monitoring program from a current level right now of $1 million a year statewide to the cap that was set in the original Senate Bill 482 for the beach monitoring program. It was a cap of $1.8 million. And so the Senate's asking for that maximum amount for the beach monitoring program statewide. So there'll be more money for that. So those are a couple examples of how budget, you know, always a challenge. But this year, the legislature is putting a lot of faith in the water board system. I believe that's my perception of it. So let's shift gears to, you know, recent issues we've dealt with. And I got to be honest, as far as actual items adopted, it's really still back to the phase two MS4 work, you know, and then that was in February. And so at this point, we're moving forward statewide with that. I was just down in Region 3, Central Coast Region, and they had amended their basin plan to incorporate the on-site wastewater treatment policy that we adopted about a year ago, about June last year, in fact. And so I'm hoping to see that kind of keep going. I think the regions around the state encourage that sort of administrative task to be taken care of. And I think the reason why Region 3 was the first one to do it is because their executive officer is acting and is from the Division of Water Quality, Ken Harris. So he was state board minded, I think, to get that administrative task done. So, but it's good news. It makes that program have a sense of statewide consistency, and we hope that there's enough flexibility there for the regional boards to implement it as appropriate. And isn't that, after all, the hallmark of our system? You know, statewide consistency with regional flexibility. So coming up, we're the upcoming agenda, a couple things I can note. We have an item that came out of our fee raising from 2011. We've committed at the state board level to really emphasize transparency. And as I reported before, in April 2012, we put a report together called the Resource Alignment Report, and that's online. And that shows, you know, the breakdown of fees we collect and where they go. Another outgrowth of that process was to address the issue brought up by multiple stakeholders about the cost of compliance with our permit conditions beyond fees. You know, just this theme that came before us and we understand. And so at the state board, we're encouraging these different groups. We have the four groups, and they're, by the way, they're reporting to us on Tuesday and they're on their progress. So that's why I'm bringing this up. This next Tuesday, the cost of compliance work groups are reporting to the state board, and those groups are wastewater, NPDES, stormwater, irrigated agriculture, and then just general waste discharge requirements, which seems to have an agricultural flavor because it relates a little more to the dairy issues, is my sense. It just happens to be who's on that group. We all know WDRs are very broad. And, you know, obviously, as I report to you about this, I'm concerned that the WDR group might not be representing the timber interests enough, maybe. But for the time being, we're getting this status report. And wastewater is a little ahead because they're sort of a more mature regulatory program overall. In terms of specificity of what we expect. Now, the flavor of this input we've received with cost of compliance and what we're trying to do at the state board level is really guide the discussion into areas where, frankly, you know, maybe one region of our state has moved ahead a little bit in terms of being creative about cost savings ideas. You know, I point to my old region, Region 2, San Francisco Bay region, as accomplishing something like this with the regional monitoring program. There was a lot of, good fortune of having a lot of dischargers with their own local effects monitoring programs, and they were able to combine resources and develop a science-based program that was more efficient in terms of helping us make good decisions. So a regional monitoring program is a good example of a way to reduce the cost of compliance, for instance. There are lots of other examples region-wide where our staff has used creativity to come up with ways for more efficiency. And I'll just say, in the cost of compliance dialogue, the monitoring costs come up a lot. Big surprise, right? But I know, in my experience in different regions, that staff is always mindful of that. And I just encourage that continued creativity and flexibility at the regional levels to really come up with site-specific, you know, cost efficiency ideas. So that's what I hope to see out of this. You know, some folks say, well, we really want to see state board then take these recommendations and make them some sort of guidance or requirement. And I just caution that sort of jumping to that level of specificity in policy making. Number one, it means that we'll have to spend staff resources developing the policy, right? That means something else is not going to get done. So, you know, that give you a flavor of the discussion about this cost of compliance issue and just our owning the responsibility of listening and encouraging creativity in how our programs continuously improve. You know, having been in the system, I think we do these things, and we can always find ways creatively to improve. So that discussion will be ongoing. We're not prescribing any sort of product, you know, of great policy dimension until we kind of collaboratively come to that conclusion, and that would include the regional water boards. Okay. You know, as we look at upcoming legislation, I mentioned the drinking water bill,
And you might have some questions about, you know, how would that sort of play out if we were to have the division of drinking water under the water board system? You know, how would that affect regional boards? As you might imagine, you know, we've thought about this and we've actually written about it. There is a letter from to the state water board from Jerry Hill, assembly member Jerry Hill, and we responded to these questions that have come up during the hearings. You know, what there's a comment that state water board and the regional boards aren't experts in public health, and so we had a very long response to that, which is, well, of course we're experts in public health, you know. And these were objections raised by AQUA, the Association of California Water Agencies. And, you know, I won't speculate as to why they're opposed to this shift, but they've indicated that. But their points that they use to argue against the shift, there's some good ones. But that one is an example of one that I think staff, you know, and the board members would take exception to, you know, that somehow we don't deal with public health, and we don't set protective enough levels for source drinking water. That's not really true. We use MCLs in our basin plans throughout the state. It's actually a little extra conservative to do it that way. So if you're interested, we have about a four-page letter that we sent just a couple days ago explaining and answering questions about how we would go about this migration. You know, one of the things I'm concerned about are the people involved, you know, the dedicated staff in the Division of Drinking Water who do a great job, and just want to assure folks that we're want to consider the human dimension of such a move. You know, people live and work in certain areas, and it's not a condemnation of that. What we're seeing is just certain, like, over 200 communities in the state kind of falling through the cracks in terms of safe drinking water. And I think those that have pushed for this migration, they have a preference for our system of having public hearings, discussing decisions in public, and having input. Whereas the Department of Public Health, it's kind of an org chart challenge because you have a director of the department and you have a lot of different divisions, and the Division of Drinking Water doesn't rise to the top in terms of urgency on a day-to-day basis. You know, they're dealing with hospitals, West Nile virus, AIDS, other public health issues of great import. And so drinking water, it's kind of, if you see the org chart of DPH, it's where's the drinking water? It's, you know, it's all the way down at the bottom. It's in the basement. So let's see. One thing you all are aware of is this 401 audit. Does that ring a bell? Yeah, and in my report, are you aware that there was a report that came out on that, and are you in receipt of that report? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You know, I just have it handy, the recommendations, and you know, I see a theme here that we deal with on all of our programs. You know, in terms of that theme of statewide consistency versus regional flexibility, and getting that right. I thought there were some constructive things recommended for the State Water Board to do. And, you know, and as you've heard from me before, on the wetlands policy development, that's a place, I believe, where we can help, you know, rise to the, or say, step up to the plate from the state board perspective and be constructive in identifying areas of statewide consistency that are appropriate. I think, you know, I could read from you know, it's a classic list of things in terms of, you know, getting our processing time frames and application forms consistent. I mean, I think we can work together on that, no problem. There was an issue of, you know, differential charging of fees, you know, getting that all aligned. And I just encourage you all to participate with us and other regional boards to identify areas where we can create consistency. I think there's there's some roles for the State Water Board to do accounting of the fines and the penalty actions that have been collected. So, you know, we're getting better at the state board about keeping track of things, you know, data management. So, yeah, I actually see the silver lining in all this, that personally, as a state board member, I think the 401 program is very important, you know, and I think working closely with the Department of Fish and Wildlife in an effective permitting program has, you know, really important results for the water resources of the state. So, you know, I welcome a little attention to the program so we can kind of elevate its importance and do a great job protecting wetland resources and streams, riparian corridors. Okay, well, that's all I have today, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. John Corbett.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for getting the logging tax allocation. The state board was a little slow off the mark on that. I also want to thank regional board staff, and without getting into the details outside of our system, I lobbied very heavily for a correction to the initial misstart. So I really appreciate you were able to follow up on that. I want to ask you in regard to public well logs, is that retroactive access for prior data collected, or will that only be from going forward, or do you know?
I don't know the details. It's sort of a generic question or request, let's say, by the Senate representatives. That's a discussion that's ongoing, you know, how much of that information should be public, you know, from a private well and that sort of thing. And so a lot of issues have to be worked through. But what the signal is from the Senate is we want to make money available to the water boards and we want this information public. Okay. Well, easier said than done, and, you know, and that would be the beginning of that dialogue.
And then I thought I heard your comment that there were concerns that timber wasn't being represented. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, this is just from a state board member's perspective. I've been through two hearings on this issue, and, you know, the timber interests just haven't been raised, you know, about cost of compliance. You know, the input, maybe, you know, I don't know the dealings. Our staff haven't been real integrated into these work groups, and that's okay. We kind of want that input to be, you know, put together, not with a lot of our staff meddling with it. But I would just say encourage, you know, all interest groups to submit, because the time is now. We are talking about the cost of compliance with our regulatory program statewide. Tuesday is the third hearing we've had on the issue. And, you know, we're going to deliver recommendations soon. So now's the time.
If there's any chance to run those by the regional board, that'd be appreciated.
It's real important, you know, and we'll do our level best to integrate and communicate those issues at the appropriate level.
And then on the public health transfer, I'd very much like to see that letter. I constantly hit up by CalAgua on it and have scrupulously avoided anything, but I would like to have better background from the state. And lastly, I want to say on wetlands, we appreciate, of course, any consistency you can get. But when I was on both the regional and state coastal commission, we struggled for many years on that. I do want to give a little plug for the North Coast Dairy. They're all on former diked wetlands. And so you have to be careful that a southern-based approach will not put the dairy business out of business in the North Coast. And so you get to the wetter regions, it is a little different than in the drier regions. And also indicator species, I found, never could be made consistent. For example, alder were a great indicator species in Southern California. Northern California, you grade the land and it's all alder, whether it's wetland or not, because of the higher rainfalls.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I really like to hear examples like that, because it really rings true with my background as well. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Moore, at our May meeting in Eureka, I think you left before the presentation on marijuana growing and its impact on waters, and I'm wondering what the state board is doing. I've heard rumors, but I'm not sure, so mm-hmm. I'm coming to the horse's mouth. What is the state board doing with respect to messing up the beneficial uses of water
through pot growing.
Hey, you know, yeah, I'm sorry I missed that hearing. I've had a chance to talk at length with staff about the issue, Stormer, and I know the issue is significant. What's the state board doing about it? Mm-hmm. Nothing. I'm here. I'm the liaison. There's nothing tabled up. I've got a list here of all the things we are doing. You know, it's like 6 pages of statewide policy making and all that. It's not to say it's not something we would want to work on.
I just want to give a heads up. The regional board is looking at taking some approaches in the near future.
Yeah, and you know, this is an issue not limited to Region 1. We have it in Region 2. Region 5, I think, is really significant. So I would just say, what are we doing? Nothing. Are we ignoring the issue? No. The regional boards are gathering important information, working with other agencies, and, you know, we want to be involved. We recognize the significance of the issue. We don't carry guns, so I can't help that side of it.
Neither do we.
Exactly. So no, we appreciate the issue, and to the extent, you know, let's definitely talk about how we can strategize and get it into the mix. You know, I think you'll see a great responsiveness from us, you know, in terms of our, you know, the two things we do, right, funding and regulatory. And so let's just explore the tools the State Water Board has and how we can strengthen the regional board's efforts and get other regional boards involved. We can help with that if you need help.
Well, and there was, the theme of that really was the multi-agency task force that actually Stormer is participating on our behalf. And I think we do have a role to play as water boards, both regional and state board. And I think in that cooperative effort, there's a lot going on. The one underlying theme, the one thing that really hit me was that, you know, any other discharge of waste, if you look at it simply from a discharge of waste standpoint, we certainly have authority there, and I think that authority is well established.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding was State Board Water Right, though, was looking at some of the water allocation side of that. So, I mean, I think there's many facets to that. Mm-hmm. So,
forgive me for being blunt, but at the State Water Board level, executive, it hasn't reached that yet. But the Department of Water Rights is a great Division of Water Rights is a great place to work on, you know, in terms of if you look at just the last few years, there's a lot more staff available in that division thanks to legislative direction and augmentation of our budget. So whereas 5-6 years ago, we would have had a hard time responding compared to now.
I appreciate the dialogue and you being candid about that, because it's something that's really been important to us, and, you know, we've been working hard to bring that up as an issue and get that information to our board. And Eureka was pretty enlightening with the multi-agency force and the reporting that we got back from them, and there's been a lot of work that's been done on that in the last year or so. I mean, it's really, the effects being quantified are, you know, pretty amazing. So that being said, I think that's given us direction for how we can coordinate on our end and give you a recommendation. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we've got a good track record there. And
absolutely.
Clearly, we want to respond to sort of the triage element of this. You know, it's so significant. I'm very sensitive to what you're saying in terms of, one operation and how the kind of damage it can do. And it's sort of a classic conundrum we face as water boards. We're real good at, you know, the permit, the folks who want to follow the rules. You know, we have a good system. We're responsive, creative. For the people who aren't following the rules, we're not as elastic and capable of responding, and yet you see the damage, and it's significant. So it's a classic setup of you have all these good actors working hard, and then it's all their efforts are undone by these other factors. And so I look forward to mobilizing to the extent our water boards are capable.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate your coming.
Thank you.
Executive